nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
So welcome to week two of our summer school. And as I just mentioned, we're going to start off week two in talking about the physics of nanoscale transistors. So what I'm going to try to do is to apply some of the ideas that Professor Dada talked about in a very fundamental and very general way to a very familiar device to you if you're an electrical engineer. And you can see how this all works out in a familiar context. And I'm going to use a mixture of top-down and bottom-up approaches because I think many of you are familiar with a traditional way of looking at MOSFETs. And now you've seen, you know, a broader and more general way to look at small electronic devices in a very general way. And hopefully you can see how we can put these two together. So last week was all about electronics from the bottom up, and Professor Dada mentioned how the natural evolution of technology has taken us from these large dimensions down to smaller and smaller dimensions. So we started with semiconductor technology in the 50s, when carrier transport was diffusive, there was a lot of scattering. Particles underwent a random walk as they went from source to drain. We could describe devices with drift diffusion equations. Then they got shorter and shorter. We started more recently to begin to worry about ballistic transport, and we're now in the regime where oftentimes quantum transport is very important. So this is all happened in silicon technology as well. My first job was in 1974. I was an MOS process engineer working on an NMOS process. And at that time, we were producing a few thousand transistors per chip. The technology was 5 micron channel length, and that was really state of the art at that time. And you can see what's happened, you know, since my first job. Channel lengths have gone from 5 microns to about 50 nanometers today. The number of transistors on a chip has gone from a few thousand to over a billion. And we've gotten in this regime where devices are very small and really very interesting. And the concepts that were originally developed and that are still in all the textbooks to describe these devices are really being pushed maybe a little bit too far. So what I want to talk about in the next 4 days is really not a comprehensive discussion of the physics and technology and all of the issues that have to do with modern-day silicon technology, but really to focus on the physics. How do you think about these very small devices? How do you understand them in a simple way? So my specific objectives are these. It's to apply the concepts that you learned last week to this very familiar device. Along the way, next Wednesday, I believe, we will take the theory that we develop over the first couple of days, and we'll look at some measured data of a more or less current generation technology device, and we'll see how the theory that we've developed relates to present-day devices. We will try from time to time to relate what I'm doing to some serious simulations. I'm going to describe a very simple way to think about these devices, and they really are very simple. You know, the essential operating principles are really easy to understand. Sometimes when people hear this talk, they say it's too simple. It can't possibly be that easy. I think, of course, we need serious simulation when you want quantitative predictions on real devices with realistic 3D geometries and everything. But you need a simple way to understand those simulations. The reason that I believe that it's correct is because we spent years doing very complicated and serious simulations, and what I'm trying to tell you is the understanding that we've distilled from all of that work. So along the way, you know, we'll try to identify some open research questions and how this approach might apply to other materials and devices like 3-5 or nanowire MOSFETs. I won't actually do a lot of that unless you ask me questions during the Q&A session. I'll say a little bit about it. Okay, so the very broad objective is to develop a simple way to understand the essential operating physics of these small devices. And just to reiterate, it's not a comprehensive course on MOS device physics. There'll be a few things that I'll have to just state and say, you know, things like details of MOS CV theory or whatever that I'll have to say, you know, this is standard MOS theory and here's the result, because we don't have time to go through all of that. If you're here at Purdue, that's a course I teach called EE612. Actually, the whole course is online, so if you need more information on standard MOS theory, you can find it there. The intent is not to replace numerical simulations, which are needed in many cases, but to help interpret what you see when you do a numerical simulation. Let's see, there was something that Cipriano said a few times last week that I wrote down and I'm trying to remember. He says, calculating, something to the effect of calculating something and understanding it are two different things. So what we're going to be talking about today is, or this week, is mostly not simulating MOSFETs and how you do that, but it's understanding the results you get after you do that. And the overall objective is to provide a conceptual framework. How do you think about experiments and what you're seeing? How you think about new device designs? How you do a sanity check when you do some sophisticated simulation? And I don't see this so much now, but a few years ago when we started it, before these ideas really became widely known and used by people, there were times when I would go to a conference and I would see a result being presented from some commercial simulation program, very sophisticated, that was clearly wrong. You know, it was like twice the ballistic limit. So it's useful to understand what the ballistic limits are and how you can do sanity checks, because even on sophisticated models, they may or may not comprehend these effects. If you don't put the right input parameters in, you may not necessarily get the right results. Okay, so we have 8 lectures prepared. One of them comes in 2 parts. That's the one tomorrow. And what I would like to do now is just go through quickly each of these lectures so you know what's in store. So lecture 1, which will start right after this introduction, is a review of MOSFET fundamentals. So if you're an electrical engineer and have had a semiconductor device course, you've seen this before. So if you'd like to read your email or even skip out this lecture, I won't be offended. Maybe you'll see 1 or 2 new things there. But it's just to get us all prepared for the rest of the short course. So we'll look at the traditional drift diffusion theory very quickly, talk about some performance metrics that device engineers use when they go in and measure a device and characterize it, and discuss very briefly what we mean by ballistic transport, which we'll be talking about a lot. Now, this afternoon, I'd like to present a lecture on the elementary theory of the nanoscale MOSFET, and I'll try to do this in a very, very simple way, without any complicated mathematics. I think it could be taught to undergraduates. It presents the whole concept in the simplest possible way that I can, and the rest of the course will really be about amplifying that and doing it properly. So the meat of the short course is on Tuesday, where the lecture is in 2 parts. So this is the theory of the ballistic MOSFET, and this will go through the theory and do it properly. We'll do it step by step. We won't assume Boltzmann statistics. We'll assume Fermi-Dirac statistics, so we'll have to get comfortable with Fermi-Dirac integrals and things like that. There are some supplementary notes that you have in the handout material on Fermi-Dirac integrals that you might find useful. And part 3B is just a continuation where we'll talk about how you think about 2D electrostatics and do sub-threshold in addition to above-threshold. Okay, now no device is completely ballistic. You know, years ago they were dominated by scattering. Now they're not dominated by scattering, but they're not completely ballistic. This is where things get really difficult. This region in between. When it's completely ballistic, we can do it very easily. When it's completely diffusive, we can use traditional theory and it's all well understood. When it's in between, which is where we are these days, it gets much more complicated. But we can still understand the essential features, and that's what this lecture is all about. How do you understand what detailed simulations tell you about scattering in a very simple way? In lecture 5, then, we'll actually look at some measured data and see how this all relates to actual devices, how you can use the theory to analyze measurements and understand where current day MOSFETs are. Now, for most of the short course, I'm going to ignore quantum mechanics. And people frequently say, how can you do that? These devices are so small. You know, quantum mechanics surely must be important. And it is in certain features, but MOSFETs are really designed to be remarkably classical devices. When you push them really small, which we're getting to these days, you start to see quantum effects, quantum confinement and quantum tunneling. And we need to be aware of that because it's not included in the simple model. It generally degrades the performance of a MOSFET. And finally, on the last lecture, so I'm going to use a mixture of techniques that is, you know, not quite as elegant and comprehensive as Ciprio's. I'm going to use a mixture of top-down and bottom-up because I think many of you are familiar with EK diagrams and mobility and drift diffusion. And I'm hoping that that will allow you to see the connection between what you know and this other way of looking at devices. But on the last lecture, I would like to try to do everything the way Ciprio would do it. And it probably won't be quite the way Ciprio would do it, but I hope Ciprio will be in the audience. And we can dispense with EK diagrams and mobility, and we can just start with Ciprio's generic model and see if we can get all of the results. Okay, so that's pretty much the plan. And there are lab exercises that go with each of these 4 days. We encourage you to participate in those as well. And in fact, I would like to thank 4 of my students, most of whom have gotten up and are here right now. Yung-Fei Gao, Chang-Wook Jiang, Yang Lu, and Schwab Salamat, who are going to be helping with the lab exercises and who did a lot of work in helping me get ready for these lectures and producing the figures and everything. Okay, so that's what the next 4 days are all about. And with that, I'll start lecture 1. And as I said, we'll have the same format that we had last week. Give a lecture, have a short break, get a cup of coffee, and then we'll have a Q&A session and do it that way. Okay.